It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The U.S. urges Saudi Arabia to agree to a humanitarian halt to its Yemen air campaign. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Saudi Arabia, where he says he's talking about a proposed humanitarian pause in the fighting by the Saudi-led coalition against Houthi rebels in Yemen. He spoke of his mission during remarks in Djibouti Wednesday.
Shortages of food, shortages of fuel, shortages of medicine. The situation is getting more dire by the day, and we're deeply concerned about that. And we have urged all sides, anybody involved, to comply with humanitarian law and to take every precaution to keep civilians out of the line of fire, out of harm's way, as well as to provide the opportunity for humanitarian assistance to be able to be delivered.
Mr. Kerry announced nearly $70 million in new U.S. aid to Yemen to provide food, water, shelter, and other assistance. Saudi Arabia launched its bombing campaign against Houthi rebels in Yemen back in March. Despite deadly anti-government protests, Burundi's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, on Wednesday said he will run for a third term in general elections, but he said this would be his last term in office. Critics say seeking the term violates the country's 2005 constitution, ending a civil war between Hutus and Tutsis. The Constitutional Court this week ruled his first term did not count because he was selected by fellow lawmakers, not in a popular vote. Meanwhile, the protests against the president and his ruling party continued. More than a week of unrest has left at least 12 dead. Reuters reports 40,000 Burundians have fled to Rwanda, Tanzania, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. This is VOA News. Britain's go to the polls Thursday in what's being described as the closest election in the United Kingdom in decades between the Conservatives and Labour. British Prime Minister David Cameron and opposition Labour leader Ed Miliband made their final appeals to voters Wednesday. This is Mr. Cameron.
This is the biggest and most important election in a generation in our country. And when you're standing there in that polling booth with that stubby pencil in your hand, I want you to know this. How you vote could make the real difference in this election campaign. It comes down to a choice of leadership. Whether you want me to continue leading our country and taking it forward, or whether you want Ed Miliband and you go back to the start and waste the work of the last 5 years.
The polling suggests the election results could force either of Britain's two main political parties to form a new coalition government, with any of several lesser parties collecting a smaller share of seats in the 650-member House of Commons. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has put together a new government, reaching a last-minute deal late Wednesday with the Jewish Home Party just ahead of a midnight deadline. Mr. Netanyahu's conservative Likud party will govern with a one-seat majority in the 120-seat Knesset. French investigators say the co-pilot who deliberately brought down a German Wings airliner in the French Alps back in March, killing all 150 on board, apparently practiced a controlled descent during an earlier flight the same day. In a 30-page report, investigators say co-pilot Andreas Lubitz was alone in the cockpit during the initial descent, as he was when the German Wings flight made its fatal descent hours later during the return flight to Dusseldorf. Remy Judy is director of the Bureau of Investigation and Analysis.
Next step of the investigation, the main question we will try to address is understanding why it is possible that despite the fact that the pilots are subject to medical control, it is possible to have situations where a pilot with psychological troubles or deficiencies is on board an aircraft with passenger with the intent of destroying the aircraft and its occupants.
The revelation Lubitz may have rehearsed the maneuver appears to support the assumption the crash was not only deliberate but premeditated. The Nigerian military says it rescued another 25 women and children from camps operated by the Sunni insurgent group Boko Haram. The army has found some 700 women and children at camps in the insurgent group's last known stronghold of the Sembisa forest. Meanwhile, media reports quoting witnesses say Niger's army forced thousands of Nigerian refugees to leave Niger's border areas near Lake Chad and return to Nigeria following a Boko Haram attack on a Niger army garrison. As many as 25,000 refugees may be involved. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. East African leaders meet Burundi political leaders to defuse tension.
Our team acts like a fact-finding mission, and we get the details of what is happening on the ground by way of asking questions.
Bernard Membe is Tanzania's Minister of Foreign Affairs. Mozambique's opposition issues an ultimatum to President Filipe Nyusi. The United Nations says the voluntary return of Somali refugees is a global priority. Zimbabwe appeals to the West for direct funding. And Liberia could be declared Ebola-free this Saturday.
So May 9th is our magic date. If there are no new cases, and I believe there will be no new cases, we would have met the threshold.
Axel Ade is Liberia's Minister of Commerce and Industry, and a new automated message system aims to reduce Cameroon's maternal and neonatal deaths. Those stories plus Mark Oman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Officials representing the East African community have met with Burundi's political leaders, including the president, to express their concerns as the country deals with daily protests. At least 12 people have died in protest against President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to run for a third term. Mohamed Yusuf has more for VOA from Bujumbura.
Government ministers from Tanzania, Kenya, Rwanda and Uganda spent March of Wednesday meeting with Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza and other political leaders to express their fears over the direction the country is taking. The capital, Bujumbura, has seen protests almost every day since the president announced last month his plan to run for a third term. Demonstrators say Mr. Nkurunziza is violating a third term limit in the constitution, but Burundi's constitutional court ruled he could run because he was elected by parliament, not voters, for first time in 2005. Bernard Membe, Tanzania's Minister of Foreign Affairs, said the ministers came to Burundi to get first-hand information on the situation.
Our team acts like a fact-finding mission, and we get the details of what is happening on the ground by way of asking questions. And we only asked the 4 questions to the president.
He said the ministers would ask the same questions when they met with Burundi's opposition leaders, but did not specify what the questions are. Membe says the East African community is concerned about the situation in Burundi and says a 5-nation regional bloc will hold a summit in Tanzania's capital Dar es Salaam on May 13th to discuss it.
Nous n'allons pas accepter. Nous n'allons pas accepter qu'on soit tué de cette manière.
Just before the 4 leaders from East Africa left the hotel where they met the opposition groups, there was a commotion as security officers tried to arrest a presidential candidate, Odifa Ndebitoreye. The candidate lashed out at police. Tanzania's Foreign Affairs Minister assured us that no one can be arrested, and now see here are police officers. They are killing people, and yesterday I saw you throw grenades on protesters in Nyakabiga. Police killed 3 protesters in Bujumbura on Monday, although the police say it was the demonstrators who threw a grenade. Police eventually took the candidate away on grounds that he had organized a protest. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Bujumbura.
Mozambique's ruling Frelimo party reneged on a gentleman's agreement between President Filipe Nyusi and main opposition leader Afonso Darakama to help resolve the dispute surrounding last year's election. Eduardo Naburete, head of external relations for the opposition RENAMO, says the opposition has refused to accept Mr. Nyusi's election because the vote was rigged.
As a way of solving this political crisis, we proposed that we should be given a chance to rule in the provinces where we got majority of votes. During the meeting between President Afonso Dhlakama and President Nyusi, it was agreed that that would be a possible solution to the after-election crisis. And the president suggested to the President Dhlakama that he should submit this bill to the parliament, and it will be taken from there. To our surprise, the ruling party in parliament did not even consider discussing this deal. They just voted it out. In our view, what was defeated was not Renamo. What was defeated was the will of the people.
But, Mr. Namburete, if there's a problem with the gentleman's agreement, why not go to the president rather than give an ultimatum and a possibility of threat and violence to undermine the country's stability?
Well, the president has been following everything that is happening in the parliament, and President Akama had expressed interest in meeting him to discuss this issue. That's why he gave this period of 2 months to see if the two leaders can meet and sort out this issue. Otherwise, we can no longer wait for a solution that apparently or clearly is not going to happen within the parliament. So we are sending back the message to the people who have asked us to go this way and inform the people that Frelimo has refused to fulfill the agreement that we had. And from there, it will be the people deciding what should happen next.
But some people are saying that it's impossible and that the people are unwilling to go back to war and create instability, especially when there's peace reigning in the country. Somebody's political ambitions should not supersede people's life and property in Mozambique. What is your take on that?
People are taking our stand very wrongly. We are not proposing war, but we are saying that we are not going just to cross our hands. But it can mean that people will take up the streets, will demonstrate, will do everything in their power within the Constitution to demonstrate that they are not happy with the decision that was taken. Now, the government, as usual, will interfere in exercising those freedom of demonstration. Probably they will attack.
Eduardo Namburete is head of external relations for Mozambique's opposition, RENAMO. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from the capital, Maputo. The Liberian government says it expects to be Ebola-free in a few days and has a post-recovery plan in hand to restart the country's dismal economy. Government ministers say they are optimistic about the country's future as it emerges from the deadly Ebola epidemic, which has claimed more than 4,600 lives. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Liberia's Minister of Commerce and Industry, Axel Addy, says Liberia has had no new cases of Ebola for a while, and the country is approaching the finish line to be determined Ebola-free.
So May 9th is our magic date. If there are no new cases, and I believe there will be no new cases, we would have met the threshold. Some of the Ebola treatment centers actually have been decommissioned, and there are others being decommissioned.
Addy tells VOA the government knows Ebola could recur and is putting in place a management system to deal with another emergency should it arise.
It includes putting in place the right health infrastructure to deal with the response, to track any sort of new potential cases, and to monitor what's happening along the borders.
Besides strengthening its health system and protecting its people from the possibility of a new outbreak of this deadly disease, Liberia is faced with a huge task of reviving its economy. Before Ebola struck, Liberia was projecting a GDP growth rate for 2014 of between 5.9% and 7%. After the crisis hit, Liberia's gross domestic product dipped to below 1%. Liberian Minister of State without portfolio, Augustine Jarrett, says the Ebola crisis has had a cascading effect on all aspects of the economy, especially on Liberia's two main products, rubber and iron ore. He says companies closed, thousands of people lost their jobs, and farms became idle, stripping thousands of farmers of their income. He says it is clear that Liberia cannot remain dependent on two products, but must diversify into other areas. He says Liberia plans to put more emphasis in the future on working with the private sector as opposed to the government side.
Most of what we've seen in many, many decades before is that most of the people who work in Liberia work in the government sector, and that's going to change because our focus is on private sector jobs, private sector investments, and trying to move the economy in the direction where private sector players are the drivers of our economic growth and vitality.
The Liberian ministers say they are working hard to attract private investment to help build up infrastructure and to get major road, bridge, and other construction projects that had stopped during the Ebola epidemic back online. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 7th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 15 and a half minutes past the hour. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees is in Kenya this week to discuss security and voluntary repatriation from the world's largest refugee camp, Dadaab, which the Kenyan government has threatened to close. As Hilary Hula reports from Nairobi, the fate of hundreds of thousands of Somali refugees could hang in the balance.
Ever since Al-Shabaab gunmen massacred 148 people at Garissa University last month, the attention of the Kenyan government has been focused on the world's largest refugee camp, Dadaab. On April 11th, Deputy President William Ruto issued an ultimatum to the United Nations. "Close the camps within 90 days," he said, "or we will do it for you." This week, the UN's High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres, is in Kenya to discuss the future of Dadaab. Guterres met with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta on Wednesday and said he was assured that the 350,000 refugees in Dadaab would not, in fact, be forcibly sent back.
The government of Kenya has already clarified that return will take place in the context of the tripartite agreement. And as you know, the tripartite agreement is an agreement for voluntary repatriation of Somali refugees in safety and dignity to their country. There was a clear reassurance that this will be the case.
But he also made it clear that UNHCR was redoubling its efforts to make it possible for the refugees to go home. The UN's voluntary resettlement program would be enhanced, he said, and more districts in Somalia would be approved to receive returnees.
I want to reassure the government of Kenya that we'll be doing everything we can in order to create the conditions for this program of voluntary repatriation of Somalis in safety and dignity to be successful, to be sustainable, and to be meaningful.
The most recent threat to close Dadaab, coming as it did from such a powerful figure as Mr. Ruto, has alarmed the international community. But Andrew Maina of the Refugee Consortium of Kenya says the message has been the same for years.
The message that has consistently been given to UNHCR from the Kenyan government is that we're tired of hosting these people. Find a durable solution. Just get them out one way or the other.
During his visit, the High Commissioner also discussed security within Dadaab, which Kenyan officials have claimed is a haven for terrorists. Guterres acknowledged that security in the camp needs to be strengthened. But Maina says the connection between Dadaab and terrorism itself is difficult to prove.
The major problem with that is the lack of clear evidence between hosting refugees and terrorism and insecurity in the country.
What is certain is that Al-Shabaab still poses a major threat within Somalia. And at the moment, there are few structures in place to accommodate new arrivals. Guterres said significant investment was needed to create the conditions that will make refugees want to return and will give them something to return to. This, he said, includes improving security, but also building functional public services. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
Zimbabwean officials made a plea to Western governments and international organizations on Wednesday to resume direct aid to Zimbabwe. But as Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare, the United Nations and the United States seem to be happy with the current arrangements.
At a meeting, Zimbabwean Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa said that aid to Zimbabwe is currently caught fragmented, as not all of it is being channeled to prop up the country's ailing economy.
When development assistance is received by us, we have an obligation to say thank you because it is filling a financing gap. I can't say thank you if I don't know where the assistance has gone and whether we need it and whether it is playing a transformative impact in our economy.
Western countries stopped direct funding to Zimbabwe's government in 2002 when they slapped its leadership with targeted sanctions for alleged election rigging and human rights abuses. Since then, foreign aid to Zimbabwe has gone through United Nations agencies and other aid organizations. The U.S. government and other Western countries have cited several factors for their refusal to give aid through the government. These include controversial economic policies, fears of corruption, and widely documented human rights violations by President Robert Mugabe's government. U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton was among many Western dignitaries that attended the meeting with Chinamasa.
We think that the foundation for everything is respect for the rule of law. Secondly, I think implementation of the new constitution. Third, we think that clear protection, respect for private property, is absolutely essential to get the economy going again. And then fourth and finally, I think a very clear and predictable, transparent investment framework so that someone who's thinking about investing in Zimbabwe knows what the rules are with great clarity and can count on those rules being the same next week or next year.
The U.S. is the leading provider of humanitarian assistance to Zimbabwe. Last year alone, USAID provided nearly $25 million in emergency food aid. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News in Harare.
Cameroon is experimenting with an automated message service to reduce the number of deaths of pregnant women and infants in Cameroon due to lack of information on antenatal care. The service, Gifted Mom, created by 23-year-old Alan Ntef, uses mobile phones to remind pregnant women when to come for care and alert mothers on vaccination schedules for their infants. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
According to Cameroon's Ministry of Public Health, 8,000 pregnant women and 30,000 babies die each year in Cameroon, a Central African nation with a population of about 22 million people. Dr. Alice Nkwine of Cameroon's Ministry of Public Health says many of those fatalities could be avoided with the proper antenatal care.
Unfortunately, the figure has been rising. That is a very serious matter. We could say that it's more severe during pregnancy because most of the time, the mother and child will die if appropriate care is not given immediately, or minimizing the importance of attending antenatal clinic.
It's to reduce such avoidable deaths that Alain Teff started Gifted Mom, a service using automated SMS and voice messages via mobile phones to remind pregnant women when to come for antenatal care and alert new mothers about vaccination schedules for their babies. Ntef says the idea for the service came to him 4 years ago when he was 19 years old. He conducted a study that indicated women who had complications during pregnancy often came late for antenatal care, and the complications are discovered late when it is difficult to treat them.
We noticed that there were mobile phones in rural areas than TV sets, and so we decided to use mobile phones to educate pregnant women on when to come for the next antenatal care, and also tell them why they should come for the antenatal care, and also alert mothers with babies on when to bring their babies for the next vaccination session.
Ntef says they began working with non-governmental organizations and hospitals, collecting telephone numbers of all pregnant women to inform them on what to do. He says the first difficulty they faced was that many women in rural areas of Cameroon do not understand Cameroon's official languages, English and French, and some could neither read nor write. So he used Pidgin English for many of the messages. Ntef's efforts through Gifted Mom to potentially save thousands of lives in the years to come has earned him the Queen of England's Young Leader Award and the South African Anzisha Prize organized by the MasterCard Foundation. He has also received a number of awards from Cameroon's Ministries of Youth Affairs and Health. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ullman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with the volleyball. Rwanda's Charlotte Nzayisenga and Daisy Mutasimpundu lead Rwanda's quest to prevail at the Africa Zone 5 Women's All-Africa Games Beach Volleyball qualifiers in Mombasa, Kenya. After the duo won the 2012 Africa Junior Beach Volleyball Cup in Togo, they have in recent years been the mainstay in Rwanda's improved senior women's team. The qualifiers begin tomorrow, Friday, and will feature teams from Burundi, Egypt, Ethiopia, Rwanda, Sudan, Uganda, and hosts Kenya. In boxing, Ghana's Joshua Cloti steps into the ring to fight Mexico's Jorge Silva in a 12-round super welterweight bout in Houston, Texas State in the United States of America on Saturday. A win by Cloti could set him up for a fight with another Mexican, Saul Canelo Alvarez, who is a top contender in the WBA junior middleweight rankings, just behind the champion American Floyd Mayweather. Turning to football, Djibouti will stage the return leg between Rwanda and hosts Somalia in the Africa Under-23 Championship qualifiers. Somalia Football Federation Secretary General Hassan Mohamed Mahmoud told the media in Kigali, Rwanda. The match will be played in Djibouti's Guled Stadium after Kenyan football authorities declined to host the match, citing security concerns, Mahmoud explained. Rwanda won the opening leg 2-0 in Kigali. In the same qualifiers, Kenya hosts Botswana in Nairobi on Saturday. Botswana won the first leg 3-0. The contest is the first step towards qualifying for the Africa Under-23 Championships due in Senegal in December. In Senegal, the top three teams advanced to the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics in Brazil. Finally, Egypt's Orange African Confederations Cup holders El Ahly have elevated their youth team manager, Fathi Mabrouk, to coach their senior team as they embark on the mini-league phase to defend their Confederations Cup. Mabrouk replaces Spaniard Juan Carlos Garrido, who was sacked after El Ahly were eliminated in the Orange Africa Champions League last weekend by Morocco's Maghreb Tetouan. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omar in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, May 7th.
The ongoing fuel scarcity in Nigeria is an insult and a challenge to an oil-producing nation like Nigeria. Imagine a liter of fuel is now sold for over 200 naira as against the government-approved price of 87 naira. Government should please do something about it. In the interest of the poor masses. Alemi Praying John is here in Ogudu Cattle Ranch, Cross River State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry Wednesday met with Djibouti President Ismail Omar Guelleh and Foreign Minister Mohamed Ali Yusuf and thanked them for their assistance to hundreds of Americans who sought refuge from the violence in Yemen, which is located just across the Gulf of Aden from Djibouti. Suspected cattle rustlers ambushed and killed at least 54 people in a village in northwest Kenya, then drove away hundreds of livestock. And that is this for this Thursday, May 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Marco Oman, along with our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm James Butty in Washington, wishing all of you a very good Thursday.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee. Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head.
Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.